Welcome to Season 2 of Tech Central's Meet the CIO, which is brought to you today by NTT Data, where global experience meets local impact. My name is Duncan MacLeod, and I'm the editor of Tech Central. Now, this series of shows has proved very popular, certainly in Season 1. I thoroughly enjoyed some of the conversations that we had. In fact, we had some really great guests in Season 1 of Meet the CIO, so if you've missed any of those, do go back and have a listen or watch. They're available on YouTube, on Tech Central, of course, and also through your favorite podcasting service. But in no particular order, some of the great guests we had in Season 1 of Meet the CIO included Marijke Guest of Nedbank, Skalk Visser of CelC, Carissa Varma of Microsoft, Jörg Fischer of Standard Bank Group, Bruce Pavley of Time Bank. I see they're now renaming themselves as GoTime, interestingly. Shabana Theva of Investec, Jose Suarez of the Capital Hotels Group, and Yoshin Padiachi of Tsebo Solutions Group. Now, we're into Season 2, and I'm very pleased to welcome our first guest of the new season. Kaya Mbanga is Chief Information and Digital Officer at BDO South Africa, where he also heads a business called BDO Digital. Very good to see you. Thanks for making the time, Kaya.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Duncan. Good to be here.
That's a pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Now, BDO, largely an auditing firm, although I think you've got your fingers in a whole number of pies. Just give me the quick elevator pitch. Who is BDO? It's a global company. What do you do here in South Africa?
Yeah. So BDO South Africa is part of a network of firms under the collective brand called BDO. Mm-hmm. We operate in about 190 countries. With presence in South Africa and in some territories on the African continent. Typical auditing firm, audit assurance tax advisory. I lead a team called BDO Digital that operates under the advisory banner.
Is that a consultancy?
It's a professional services firm in the technology space, and we go to market with a range of digital services. But the firm itself is predominantly an audit firm.
Mm-hmm. It's your bread and butter. That's where it's come from.
There we go. Yeah, that's where we really built up the firm. But as you would understand, you know, you create relationships when you perform audits. Mm. And, you know, there comes a time when you then need to rotate off that account. But the relationships are still there. And you know, you'd have done some good work such that the client wants to retain your services in one form or another.
Yes.
And that's when then the channel two, which is, you know, channel one is typically audit, so channel two is everything else other than audit.
I see.
And that's where then, you know, the consulting.
And this audit rotation is actually in many markets is mandated. I think the JSE has a rule around it as well.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of jurisdictions around the world have got this mandatory rotation. And it's just simply to have a level of, I suppose, governance and independence, you know, in as far as
the auditor doesn't get too close to the client.
There we go. Yeah. And I mean, you know, throughout the decades, we've heard one or two scandals, unfortunately. So I think the market is trying to, you know, stop any sort of repeat of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I learned this morning that BDO is actually headquartered, BDO Global is headquartered in Belgium. The company is an abbreviation of Binder or Binder. I'm not sure how you pronounce it.
Binder, Dekker,
Otter. Yes. Well done.
Yeah.
The initials of the three founding firms that came together to form BDO. Obviously, that was a very, very long time ago. And the profession of auditing has changed substantially in that time. How important is technology in an auditing firm today? I mean, how much are you guys using modern technology to do your?
I think it's critical. You know, businesses can actually operate better using the right technologies, right? In as much as my value proposition for my, you know, my business is, guys, we as the internal IT team supporting our entire firm is, we have to help BDO be a better firm, whether that means creating more revenue for the firm or lowering the cost of doing business. But we do that using technology, right? And how you do that is you understand what you do manually, right? And then you decide what technology can be applied to digitize or automate that particular space. And of course, there's a plethora of technologies that you can choose, but it's really around the value that can be created through the use mm-hmm. of that technology, as opposed to just, you know, putting in money into a particular technology, but there's no foreseeable value. Mm-hmm. That's a dangerous path to follow.
So excluding your role as head of BDO Digital, let's talk about your role as CIDO of BDO. What does that entail? What does your day-to-day job look like? So obviously you're providing a lot of support to the organization.
Correct.
But maybe take us through what your day-to-day entails.
Yeah. So my role is really around providing strategic direction mm-hmm. To the team in terms of that's the direction that BDO South Africa wants to take. How do we, as the technology team, help South Africa achieve that particular strategic direction, mm-hmm. right? And there'll be, you know, a couple of goals that hopefully are realistic. You know, our CEO and ExCo might decide that, you know what, guys, we need to digitize how we do audits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, out of all the audits we have, you know, 50% of all our audits will be digitized. Then that business imperative, then in terms of our sort of scope, it then translates into how we can support the audit teams in choosing the right technologies mm-hmm. to then achieve the goal of digitizing audits, if that was the goal, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not even about selecting a technology. It could simply be about how do we tweak what we currently have just to ensure that we can bring some level of digitization to achieve the business outcome. So if you digitize audit, what's the end result? Well, you spend less hours on audits. Mm-hmm. But less hours doesn't mean you've done less work. You've achieved the same result, hopefully with the same level of quality, but with less hours, less input, less effort. That means then you've gotten some value because technology has helped you reduce the effort for the same result. And hopefully you can achieve more utilizing the same technology and more technologies mm-hmm. down the roadmap.
I imagine auditing, and I'm not an auditor and have no experience in that field whatsoever, so I don't even know what the day-to-day of an auditor entails. But I imagine that it's a very people-centered work that you're spending a lot of time looking at numbers, checking numbers, why is this not matching that, all that sort of thing. To what extent can that be automated, and at what point does automation become more of a problem than a solution? I mean, there's a lot of talk about how AI can be brought in to do a lot of automation inside companies, and there's also a lot of risk associated with that. And I presume the risk in auditing is particularly high.
Yeah.
How do you manage automation while also minimizing the risk in the process?
Yeah, it's a good question. So you're quite right. Audit is people intensive, right? And I mean, there's a whole sort of framework, you know, that finds the right people, you know, at that university level. Then we bring them in as trainees. And then we obviously train them in terms of our particular BDO methodology, mm-hmm. in terms of how we audit. But speaking about audits as well, it might be people intensive, but we've discovered that there are actually areas within that, call it the value chain of auditing, where there are sweet spots mm-hmm. for automation or digitization, right? So we typically segregate our audits from between large audits mm-hmm. and small audits, right? And that's typically driven by either the size of the sector, like financial services. You know, a lot of those audits would probably fall in the large audits category. And within those large audits, you'll find that where we maybe collect data, that could be done in an automated fashion, especially if the source of that data is, you know, of a digital means, right? Mm-hmm. And then when you then take it to the next phase where, you know, some poor soul has to go through all that data, assess it, clean it, you know, do all sorts of data cleansing just to ensure that they can make sense of that data. A lot of that can be audited with some tools that are, you know, readily available in the market. And then as you then walk through that value chain within auditing, you'll find that, you know, there's quite a few of those sweet spots where then you'll apply technology, you'll digitize, then you'll end up actually even creating templates that can be used either for a large audit or even a small audit. Mm-hmm. And then when you then sum, you know, all those different areas where you've either implemented a small piece of technology or even automation, they all add up. Mm-hmm. And you'll find that you've automated and digitized quite a bit, you know, of that audit life cycle.
Yeah.
It is still a tough job to audit everything. And I doubt that we will get to a point where, you know, you know, for the lack of a better word, you press a button and then the audit is done by a machine. It's not going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But I doubt it. I think there'll be a case of we've used a lot of technology in the best means or way possible, mm-hmm. But we still need to have a human being or human beings still verify the results or the output mm-hmm. that has come out of that process, that auditing process, as automated or digitized as that process can be made.
Mm-hmm.
You still need to have a human being who applies their experience, their knowledge to then offer some sort of result to the end client.
But the machine could help them.
100%.
I'm just thinking, I mean, reporting, flagging issues is a very important role of an auditor.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm reading JSE listed financial statements all the time, and there are audit opinions there and all that sort of thing. But very often, if there's a case of fraud or malfeasance or something going on in the company, it's the auditor who's going to pick it up first. Do you make use of AI and machine learning algorithms to look at numbers and then say to the auditor, there's something wrong here, you should dig deeper here?
Yeah.
Do you do that currently?
Yeah, very good question, Duncan. Look, we are getting into that space, I'll be honest with you. We work quite closely with IRBA, the regulator of the auditing profession in South Africa. And working closely with IRBA, they will obviously ensure that we stick to the guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe let's call it the guardrails in terms of what can and cannot be done in as far as AI is concerned. So we will trial out quite a few solutions and then present results maybe to, you know, our regulators.
Mm-hmm.
And then we will then obviously explain the end result or the output that we are looking for and how we've achieved that, but ensuring that there is no total reliance or dependency on AI. We still have applied, you know, human thought to it, because you're quite right.
Mm.
You use technology to pick up, you know, typical errors or any sort of deviation from what is standard, right? Mm. Machines and AI can do that fairly quickly and quicker than a human being. But you still want to have human beings to apply their minds so that, yes, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the person, it's the human being that eventually gave the opinion. We used AI simply to do the heavy lifting.
Yeah, yeah.
That is typically done
But do you think it's going to make reports and audits more accurate because of the fact that the machine is going to be checking the auditor's homework?
I think it will, mm-hmm. because I think it goes back to your data. So if we get data from the client and the data is of a degree that we trust mm-hmm. or a high quality data, that then means that the audit should be, call it, you know, fairly, to give you the result that you're looking for, as opposed to, you know, we don't trust this audit because, you know, the data is of a low quality. You know, there is dispute in terms of even the provenance of the data and the source or whatever.
Yes.
But as far as getting, an opinion of an audit to the quality and the opinion that you're looking for, you've got to make sure that the papers, the auditing papers that are presented, the data that is presented is of the right quality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You have a particular interest in AI, don't you? I mean, I saw on your LinkedIn that you're a member of the special interest group in AI and robotics at the IIT PSA, which is the Institute of IT Professionals in South Africa.
Correct.
So you've obviously done quite a deep dive on this technology.
Yes, I have. And then I actually gave, sorry to interrupt you,
no?
I actually gave a presentation to the IT Indaba, I think 2 or 3 days back at the Sandton Convention Center,
okay.
where I shared some of the work that we are doing as BDO in terms of investing in some AI solutions. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So personally, deep interest in technology and AI, but obviously I'm driving our firm to ensure that we utilize AI to really, really operate as a better firm,
mm-hmm.
right? One of the POCs, proof of concepts that we have just concluded, we've got an agentic AI that we've created, which offers a screen or a page mm-hmm. that somebody can use to throw in prompts, right? I've just won work for a large retail customer.
Mm-hmm.
Please search and create a master services agreement template that we can use for this work, for this type of customer.
Okay.
So it's work we've done before. Mm-hmm. We've obviously created lots of legal documents related to customers in that particular sector. And that agentic AI will then go and access all our documents related to, mm-hmm. the those types of customers in that sector. And then the AI will then create a template. And the documents are there.
Okay.
As opposed to having a you know, the poor person from legal or compliance having to recreate that document. It can be done quicker by AI. So it's gone fairly well, but we're obviously still testing it internally before we can then...
So it's like a chatbot you've created for your employees that references company information that's, you know, forms and documents and stuff that people need on a regular basis.
100%. And we're hoping that it's an AI, right? So it has to utilize data to mimic human thought or human intelligence. So without a human being prompting that particular solution, the AI should get to a point where it creates not just that one document, the MSA, that the user has requested, but the AI should think, no, hang on, we've got a legal process, and anytime there's an engagement, it starts with an MSA, but hang on, there are other legal documents that are part of this entire engagement. There is a letter of engagement, that's another template, and so forth. There's a scope of work document. So why not create those and then present them to the user?
Right.
So we're hanging back because we've thrown all these documents, not just the MSAs, but we've thrown all the other documents, and the AI has got access to them. But that's the power that we want to prove with AI, that it can, at the end of the day, mimic what we would do as a team that is tasked with creating legal documents for new engagements. Otherwise, the value isn't there. So we're doing it in a safe space internally up until we can get that value.
Okay. And is it working?
It's working, touch wood.
Yeah.
But obviously, we need to stretch and test that it's giving us the value. So we decided to add an extra screen because we want to then go into, you know, more functionality. So, you know, watch the space. We obviously are still testing and we're hoping for good things.
Are AI hallucinations a concern to you? I mean, I'm particularly thinking the media industry where we're very wary of AI because of the mistakes it can make. And auditing, of course, is a business where mistakes can't be tolerated.
Correct.
So do these hallucinations that AI are known for concern you in applying it in your internal processes?
Yeah, I think those are quite real. We've had a few of those where the AI sped results that were not expected, like totally left field. And I think that is tweaking that happens over time, right? And I suppose if you maybe take it back to even a person that you are trying to be patient because there is a journey of learning that's happening. Remember, you get to a level of intelligence through some kind of learning, right? But in the journey of learning, there'll be some mistakes and stuff. And for me, I see it in a similar fashion with AI. Right? It's going to make mistakes every now and then, which is why when people say, AI is going to replace people, AI is not going to replace people. People aren't going anywhere. AI is simply going to be a smart assistant to what we do. But we need to be patient and thoroughly test and plan for cases where there are misgivings of inaccurate information, which is what we would call hallucinations. And that's why we need time. We need to give these solutions time such that we can get them to a point where they're spitting out information and results that we trust. Right? It's like a human being. You're going to ask somebody and want to test their intelligence. At some point, you know, they'll give in. And then, you know, you're a human being. You can only take so much. But, you know, with time, you'll perfect and keep enhancing that solution up until you're happy with the value that you're getting from it.
Are you finding the skills you need in this market, particularly to do this more advanced stuff?
Look, the skills are tough to get. We're fortunate to belong to a network of firms where we hopefully can tap into some of our sister brother firms.
Globally,
yeah. So we work quite closely with the likes of BDO Mauritius, as well as some firms up north on the continent. And the relationship is, you know, vice versa, where there are resources that they will request from us as well. But you are quite right. We've taken the decision to rather train the people. You know, we find young people in the market. I mean, and of course, we all know the unemployment situation in the country. So we throw skills at them, train them, and hopefully they'll get to a point where, you know, they are equipped with the capability to then help build, you know, these AI and digital solutions. We've got a huge program, graduate intern program. Annually, we take about a good 40, 50, interns. And then, we really just train them. And then we try to retain a lot of those yearly intakes, so that obviously, you know, we've got a good crop of people that we can then create as a feeder pool for the skills that we require. But it is tough to find the right people. They are expensive as well. And I suppose, yeah, it's just part of the, you know, the demand supply type of force that you need to deal with. But yeah, I mean, I feel sorry sometimes for other firms that might not maybe belong to a network of firms. But I think locally we're doing our bit as well, just in terms of, you know, finding people and training them and ensuring that they've got the right skills.
I want to swing the conversation in a moment to just chat a bit about your background and, and how you got into this industry. But I want to ask you a last question on BDO, and specifically around cybersecurity. It's what everyone talks about these days. Do you have a separate role function for that? Do you have a CISO in your organization as well? Or does it sit under your purview?
So it falls under my responsibility. So I've got a team that ensures that, you know, we protect the organization.
Because you've got a lot of information that is sensitive.
Correct. Yeah, especially as a auditing. Yes, 100%. I mean, we've got, I think, what I would deem a holistic cybersecurity framework, where we focus on ensuring that we identify threats. You know, where then we have threats that we've identified. You know, we put in the various mechanisms. It's a multi-layered approach because with those different layers, you can have some sort of a defense in depth, you know. So you defend here, and then if the threat manages to get through that first level, there's various layers, you know, of protection. We've got policies, procedures, governance around cybersecurity. We train our employees to make sure that, you know, they've got the right level of awareness from a cyber perspective. And we've got, obviously, a business within our advisory pillar. There's a business, a cybersecurity business, that goes to market or sells services to the market. So myself, in my internal role as as the CIO, I work quite close with that team just to ensure that, obviously, you're selling those services to the firm, but they need to benefit us as the firm as well. So I ensure that I tap into that existing capability to bolster, you know, what we already have, you know, as a defense mechanism. I think our cybersecurity posture as a firm is a fairly strong one, simply because we're quite protected from different facets, you know, whether it's from an infrastructure perspective. We've got multi-factor authentication. Anytime you want to access any of our enterprise applications, internally, we ensure that we train people. We are forever, you know, ensuring that we keep our policies updated. We even have different phishing emails that we send out pretending that they're coming from outside.
All right.
And then you want to see how the
people how many people click on it.
Yes, 100%.
How many people do click on it?
It's always interesting how many of those you get. But I think by and large, I think we're fairly comfortable, again, touch wood, in terms of how we are protecting our organization.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell me a bit about yourself. How long have you been in this role for now? Where were you before? I know you've got background in FMCG and mining, I think.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So I've been working for 25 years now, and I'd say about 70% of that has been in the consulting industry. So I've worked for the likes of Accenture, Ernst & Young, consulting firms. And obviously, as any consultant, you get thrown to do work in various sectors. And then you gain a lot of experience, which is quite great. It's awesome because you get to understand how various sectors work. And then you eventually get to a point where you amass this knowledge and then you use it to hopefully benefit, you know, either your firm. So all the knowledge that I have now, and I'm lucky to be in the position that I've been appointed in, I'm using that knowledge to really, really help my organization basically be a better operating business. You know, I like the question that we need to ask better questions, because when you ask better questions, you get better answers. And some of the questions that we're asking ourselves as BDO is, you know, what aren't we doing to create, you know, happier clients? What aren't we doing to have better services services that really, really wow our customers. And through those better questions, we're challenging ourselves. We've got a strong roadmap of initiatives that internally we are executing. We are modernizing our ERP. We're bringing in a cloud version of our ERP. Mm-hmm. And with that cloud version, we are going to get quite a few features. When we spoke about AI earlier, you know, some of the features that have been promised by the service providers is that, you know, we will be getting predictive analytics, mm-hmm. and hopefully, you know, billing that will be based on the data that the ERP system is working with, where then this, you know, this ERP system can now even give you predictive billing reports, mm-hmm. Because it's got the data. So I'm proud of the investment that my firm has made, I think, into the role that I currently occupy, because technology and digital is critical, I think, for any firm to move forward. I mean, you tell me of a sector that doesn't use technology. It probably doesn't exist.
Can't think of one off the top of my head.
So I think, you know, technology having a seat at the highest leadership forum of any firm is critical for me.
Yeah.
And I've even seen some firms that have really, really put in, you know, their investment in technology, and they've reaped the benefits of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I guess it's maybe a little bit of an unfair question to ask CIOs how they got into technology, because I know not all of them started out in interest in playing around with computers when they were kids. How did you get your start in tech?
So my background is the normal, boring one. I started computer science.
Okay.
Down in the Eastern Cape.
Studying after school or during school?
In varsity.
In varsity, okay.
Yeah. So in school, I started a computer science club.
Oh, nice.
You would recall, we would be involved in quite a number of clubs at school, you know, whether it's a chess club or whatever. You know, I started one in my high school.
Which high
and,
school?
It was Dale College in King Williamstown.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I've heard of it.
Yes. Yeah.
Quite famous. Yeah.
Down in the Eastern Cape. Yeah. Yes. Red and black. And it was just myself for a good few months in that computer club society.
Okay.
So that was embarrassing. But I had the interest in computers.
What was your first computer?
It was an x86.
Okay.
You know, one of those.
Really Intel.
Yeah, Intel.
PCs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really, and I think I still have the computer I used in university, which was almost a good 28, 29 years ago.
Sure.
I still have it somewhere in my garage. Yeah.
PC.
It's a PC, mm-hmm. a proper PC, you know.
Right.
With the disk, the slot for the disk.
Oh, yeah, CD-ROM drive.
Both the CD-ROM
drive.
The floppy, yeah, exactly.
How are you giving away?
So I'm going way back. Yeah, so I started that in University of PE.
Okay.
That's what it was called back then.
It's, NMU
it's,
now.
It's now NMU, correct.
So you studied computer science.
I started computer science. Mm-hmm. So I've been a technologist through and through.
Okay.
You know? And
so
I've
done programming and all that stuff.
I've done programming in Java, C Sharp, mm-hmm. And it's been fun. And I'm glad that we still use those languages these days.
Yeah.
And it's great for me because I can relate to my team.
Yeah.
You know, when we're creating, software or code, you ask the guys, okay, compile, run the mm-hmm. program, and then you see the results. Okay, no, that's the problem there. So it makes you relatable,
mm-hmm.
you know, and relevant to the team. To be technical, but obviously you can't stay in the detail.
The tech world never stands still for a moment, and the change we've seen in the last 3 years since the emergence of ChatGPT has been quite amazing, the emergence of things like vibe coding and all this sort of stuff. I mean, I tried to generate a picture now in Google AI Studio. I wasn't paying attention to what I was doing, and it created an entire application for me that worked.
Wow.
To generate 4G, 4K images.
Yeah.
So clearly the world has changed completely over the last few years. What are you looking for in talent, and what would you advise kids to study these days?
You see, that's a good question because that's the conundrum, right? Do you tell your son or daughter to go and study coding? Because I think in a couple of years and in the very near future, the tools that we use to help create new software will be refined and advanced and they'll be tweaked to such point that they will then create these softwares and there will be no need for people to actually do programming or coding. You know, I still think there is merit in somebody understanding or learning coding, because even those same programs will need to be maintained. And then you typically call somebody who would understand.
And check for security.
Yeah, 100%. But for me, it's really then the interest is in, wow, look at technology and how technology has really, really changed the world.
Yes.
It's giving so many careers now. People can really, really get into anything that they want to get into. I have a 20-year-old son who he did a full circle. Mm-hmm. He started out halfway through his matric year saying, nope, he doesn't want an office job. He doesn't want to be, in technology or consulting like his dad, me. We said, okay, cool, we respect that. What do you want to do? And then he said, okay, maybe law. Then we exposed him to a lawyer friend of ours mm-hmm. who has a law firm. He spent a week there, didn't like it. Cool. Right. When you come back for your next holidays, we're going to expose you to something else. What do you want to do? And then it was another profession and another profession. A whole 360 came back and said, okay, you know what, stuff it. I will do computer science. Okay. So now he ended up at University of Pretoria, Turkey's, mm-hmm. And he's doing computer science. So, look, it can be a tough call in terms of, you know, what do they study? But I'm just happy that there are so many careers within technology.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's really just matching that particular area of technology to what your child prefers or yes. what they like.
Yes. And it's changing so quickly though now. I think almost half the challenge or the task of parents and or universities is to teach kids about the importance of lifelong learning.
Yeah, 100%. You're right. And it doesn't stop to such a point that now within my team, I've mandated that everybody is going to do a course either doing AI or machine learning mm-hmm. Before the end of the financial year. And the reason I'm forcing that is, again, for me, the principle still holds. It's not going to be AI that replaces people. It's going to be people with AI skills that will flourish and potentially even replace us who don't have AI skills. So do a course, even if it's a generic AI 101.
Start to understand it.
There we go.
Before the robots rise up.
Yeah, before they take over the world.
Exactly. Yeah. You posted, I think, on LinkedIn recently, and I'm going to appropriate this idea for this show because I'm going to ask all my guests on season two of Meet the CIO. But you posted a hack for your productivity, something you found very useful to give you a productivity boost.
Yeah.
I'm always looking for new ways to hack my productivity. What is it? What is your productivity hack? And please share it with our audience.
Yeah. So, I mean, emails can be distracting for me. So especially if you're somebody that struggles to focus on doing that one thing and ensuring that it's done well. So I will typically, you know, switch off or put my emails in an offline mode, right? It means there's no new emails coming in and then you can deal with your workload, right? And you might say, you know what, I need 2 hours or an hour. But then you must remember to go back and switch them back on.
You're having a very quiet afternoon here.
Yes, exactly. Because all the emails that you're sending out, they're actually in your inbox.
Yes.
So you must remember to switch them back on. And then obviously then you'll get a flood because it helps you dedicate focus time to ensuring that you actually do get your work done.
Yes.
Because I get anxious when I come back after a weekend and I've got like 200 unread emails. Mm. And you find that some of them are important, some of them are coming from clients, external clients as well. So that's what I do. It might not be the best for everybody, but it does work for me because, you know, people communicate via email these days, and they're sending important stuff. There's documents that need to be reviewed or POs that need to be processed, whatever the case might be. Mm. And then, you know, that's just basically how I
focus windows.
You focus and then you entertain, then you focus again. So that works for me.
Okay, good tip. Yeah. Kaya Mbanga is Chief Information and Digital Officer at BDO South Africa, where he also heads up BDO Digital. Thank you for your time, and thank you for chatting to Meet the CIO.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure.